Iowa to the mid-60s across western Kentucky, southeastern Missouri, and far southern reaches of Illinois and Indiana. Low temperatures tonight will range from just below zero across northern Iowa and southern Wisconsin to the low 20s in southeastern Missouri and western Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy with a chance of light snow or flurries. The temperature will fall through the 30s. Windy. The wind will be out of the west from 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 35 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy early, then clearing. It will be much colder. We'll see a low of 15. It will also be windy. The wind from the northwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with evening gusts to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 30. The wind tomorrow morning will be light and out of the west. It will be from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low of 22. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, partly sunny with a chance of snow. Look for a high of 25. The wind will be out of the northwest from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 15. Friday and Friday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow. Expect a high Friday around 30 and a low Friday night in the low 20s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 20s to the low 40s. It was cloudy with some reporting locations. Reporting precipitation at Rockford, light snow, 29 degrees. Light snow at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, where it was 30 at the top of the hour. A mix of precipitation reported at Bloomington, where it was 31. Mattoon reported 34 degrees, Carbondale 41. Light rain at South Bend, 35 degrees there at the top of the hour, 37 degrees at Lafayette. Indianapolis reported 43 degrees, Terre Haute 39. Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky, the temperature 35. The dew point, 31. The relative humidity, 85%. The wind out of the northwest at 30 miles per hour with gusts to 37 miles per hour. The wind chill index, 22. The barometric pressure, 29.86 and rising. And at 12:39, 33 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. So this much you know, political campaigns can be costly. That's especially true for one candidate who ran for alderman in Chicago last year. John Garrido lost after getting knocked around by negative ads. He sued for defamation, and the outcome could end up costing him personally more than $150,000. Sam Hudzik reports.
John Garrido is a Chicago police lieutenant and a part-time attorney, and in recent years, an aspiring politician. Last year, he ran for alderman in the 45th Ward on the city's far northwest side.
I don't want to say that I thought it was mine, you know, but we definitely were doing very well, and I thought we were going to be victorious.
His confidence wasn't misplaced. He was well-known and ran a high-energy, though relatively low-cost campaign. But in the end?
Well, it was a nail-biter. Came right down to the wire.
30 votes separated Garrido from his opponent.
Absolutely crazy. I believe one paper wrote that it was the second closest race in the history of Chicago.
If that's so, he was on the losing side of history.
Trust me, the second guessing, you know, when I stopped for dinner on a certain day, I could have walked an extra two blocks. Of course, you definitely second guess yourself all the way till the end there.
The winner was John Arena, who owns a graphic design business. Arena won the bulk of labor union support in the race. The Service Employees International Union, SEIU, of Illinois, alone spent several hundred thousand dollars on this single ward race. Garrido was hit over and over again with negative ads, many tying him to the unpopular deal to lease Chicago's parking meters to a private company, a deal that's led to increasingly higher parking rates.
When Chicago privatized parking meters, our neighborhoods and working families got hurt.
SEIU ran a TV ad on the subject.
Privatizing services. Garrido even took cash from a corporation making millions from the parking meter deal.
A sentence flashed on the screen. Garrido took cash from parking meter company.
Absolutely false. Absolutely false.
Well, maybe not absolutely false, but not quite as advertised. Turns out Greedo took money from the owner of a security firm working with the parking meter company. The claim was repeated in mailings to 45th Ward residents, along with other negative charges. Just 10 days after he lost the election, Greedo filed a defamation lawsuit.
My reputation was damaged. My career has been based on honesty and integrity, and they spent a lot of money to damage that. And unfortunately, there are very few ways that you can get recourse.
He sued SEIU and other unions that sent out negative ads, Chicago Federation of Labor and Unite Here Local 1, as well as Comcast, which aired the TV ad, and the winning candidate, John Arena, whose campaign also made the parking meter claim. Arena says Garrido should have known better than to accept a donation at all connected to the parking meter deal.
You don't want to be 10 feet from that. You don't want to be 100 miles from that deal if you're in a campaign running. If that were me, I would have returned the money. I wouldn't want to have anything to do with that deal in the context of that race.
Besides, Arena says, hits happen in the course of an election. If you can't take them, don't play the game.
It comes off as sour grapes that you ran a campaign, you win, or you lose. And you have to, decide whether you're going to come back and run again the next time or, file a lawsuit that wastes a lot of people's time.
So far, it hasn't mattered if the parking meter claim was true, somewhat true, or not true at all. The defamation suit was dismissed before its merits were ever discussed because of an Illinois law passed in 2007, the Citizen Participation Act. Supporters wanted to discourage lawsuits that could have a chilling effect on people wanting to speak out in public forums. Basically, the law says you cannot be sued for what you say if you're legitimately trying to influence government action.
So that people can't use the courts as a means of litigating their political fights.
Sherry Albrecht is an attorney at the law firm Mandel Menkes. She's represented a handful of defendants in lawsuits where the Citizen Participation Act is invoked.
The defendant doesn't have to go to the effort of trying to prove, for instance, that their statements were true or that for whatever other reason it's not defamation. All the defendant has to do is show that the Citizen Participation Act applies.
And then the lawsuit is dismissed. Not only that, the plaintiff, the person claiming to be defamed, has to pay a chunk of the other side's legal bills. And that's what John Garrido is looking at. About $13,000 for lawyers hired by the Chicago Federation of Labor, $34,000 for SEIU, $34,000 for Unite Here Local 1, $62,000 from Comcast, and $17,000 for John Arena. All told, those defendants say Garrido owes them more than $160,000. In his order last week reaffirming his dismissal of the case, Cook County Judge Michael Panter wrote the courts shouldn't police the veracity of our political candidates' campaign allegations. Garrido plans to appeal.
The statute that they're using to try to dismiss the case, in my opinion, wasn't created to protect speech that's untrue. You don't just get, a free pass to lie just because it's during a campaign. Everybody's got the opinion that, well, politics, you got to have a thick skin, it's rough and tumble, this is Chicago politics. And that's fine, and I'm good with that. Nobody has a thicker skin than a Chicago police officer. But there has to be a line somewhere that you cannot cross.
And Judge Panter at least appears somewhat sympathetic to Garrido's argument, calling attention in his ruling to a fundamental irony with the Citizen Participation Act. He wrote it closes the door on one way people participate in government, petitioning the courts for relief, in the name of protecting another right to participate in government, like running for political office. Panter pleaded for clarification, and he could get it soon. In September, the Illinois Supreme Court heard a case questioning whether such a broad protection of public statements is constitutional. The justices have not yet ruled. I'm Sam Hudzik.
St. Louis is hoping to hold on to the Rams even after a dismal football season. The Rams can break their stadium lease if the city doesn't make major upgrades to the facility. St. Louis may have a hard time competing with the team's original hometown of Los Angeles, where there are two major proposals for a new stadium. Maria Altman of St. Louis Public Radio has that.
In 1988, St. Louis fans lost the NFL Cardinals to Arizona. It didn't take long for the city to rally and lure the Rams away from L.A. with a new $280 million stadium. Today, the Edward Jones Dome in downtown St. Louis pales in comparison with a new generation of football palaces like Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis or the more than billion-dollar Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Even diehard Rams fans aren't loyal to the Dome.
It's blah. I used to go to Busch Stadium when the football Carls were here. That was awesome.
Craig Auer is watching an NFL playoff game with his dad at a sports bar in South St. Louis.
Can't describe any better. It's indoors. It's dark.
But despite disliking the Dome, Auer remembers losing the football Cardinals and says it'd be tough to go through it again.
Devastating for us as fans as well as St. Louis County.
The Rams' lease says the Dome must be in the top tier of NFL stadiums or the team can leave by 2015. Sports economist Patrick Risch says it would take major money for St. Louis to meet that requirement.
I don't think that even spending $200-300 million in upgrades would even get them into the top half.
The St. Louis Convention and Visitors Commission, which manages the Dome, has until February 1st to send its plans for upgrades to the team. But the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County, and the state of Missouri are still spending a combined $24 million annually for the Dome. And today, budgets are tight. State Senator Joe Kevany of St. Louis says he doesn't see public funding increasing for the stadium.
I think there was a heyday where people, they wanted to have the biggest and the best, and I think those days are almost over. So when it comes to priorities, professional sports franchises aren't very high on the list.
Which brings us to Los Angeles, where billionaire Philip Anschutz is proposing spending $1.2 billion of his own money for a stadium and convention center. The plan already has preliminary approval from the Los Angeles City Council.
It would be funny for them coming back to L.A., but I wouldn't be shocked if that's one of the scenarios.
That's T.J. Simers, a sports columnist for the L.A. Times, who covered the Rams when they were a Los Angeles team. He says a privately financed stadium would be enticing for any NFL owner, but the timing would likely work for the Rams.
A team like St. Louis fits perfectly for them because that new stadium will open in 2016. The NFL can say, go ahead and build your stadium, and we'll announce who's moving there after the 2015 season.
As for LA's history with the Rams, Simers says many of the city's residents are indifferent to bringing the team back. But in St. Louis, the mood is very different. Rams fans here say despite the team's poor play and lousy record, they just don't want to lose another football team. For NPR News, I'm Maria Altman in St. Louis.
Do you want to ensure that Illinois Public Media will be able to provide your children and grandchildren with the breadth of programs and services that you treasure? Leave your own legacy for them by making a gift through your estate. It's simple and it's easy. What a difference you can make to future generations. Simply call Donda Beard at 217-333-7300 or go online for more information at will.illinois.edu/support.